episode of the North Fulton Drama Club podcast. I would give you the number of the episode, but I can't recall. Does anyone recall which one this is?
I think maybe it's 7.
No, it's five. We're getting a 5 from the audience. Thank you, 5.
Thank you, 5.
My name is Thomas Strickland, and going around the table to my, let's go right.
This is Alyssa Jackson. How y'all doing tonight?
Lord.
Dory Turner.
Sean Anderson.
And Nikki Strickland.
It's been about a month since our last podcast, which sounds a bit like it's been about a month since my last confession. It's been about a month since we last talked to you. We've been working on Twelfth Night. It's our current production. Doing mostly rehearsals and...
Getting eaten by fire ants.
And costuming and deciding what we're going to do with the set and trying to coordinate sound. And what else have we been doing?
We've been sick.
We've been very ill.
And Ragweed came out, so we've also been... high on decongestants.
Yes. Our sick leaders.
Yes, antibiotics, decongestants. I found the cocktail of Flonase and Allegra D is fantastic. Speaking of that, I mentioned costuming. Let's talk about costuming for this show. This Love's Labor's Lost, we had a very specific time period, very specific place. It was set in 1963. It was Kennedy Camelot. We had some definite references to go on. For this show, Twelfth Night takes place predominantly in a place called Illyria. Illyria is basically a dream.
It's, along with Midsummer, Twelfth Night's like a fairy tale.
Very much of a fairy tale. So it's very free and open as to what we can do with it. And I think we discussed the last time the idea of the exotic other. And so we have chosen India as our location, as our exotic location that we will place Illyria in, which has given us some pretty interesting interesting means of costuming. Just taking kind of would you say a Bollywood approach to this?
It's not actually.
It's not Bollywood.
Bollywood is much more elaborate. It's much more...
expensive?
Insane. No, actually it's not.
Oh.
The more traditional you get... It seems like this...
The actual, like, Bollywood reproduction costumes are reading dong ridiculous for the cost.
That's true.
Like, you could spend $500 on an outfit, which would be called and someone's probably going to tell me I'm wrong eventually, but it's a lehenga choli, and it's a little blouse with a long skirt and usually
a
stole, or I believe it's called a dupatta. I could be using the wrong term. Anyway, so it's a scarf thing with a shirt thing with a skirt thing. And typically they're very, especially with Bollywood, they're quite elaborate. And it's, if you see pictures of Indian weddings, not that people wear Bollywood clothing to their weddings, but it's a similar sort of idea, just sort of for film, for very exuberant film with lots of singing. So
given that we started out with just, we're taking this to India, we're going to have to costume it in this manner, kind of a Victorian era, loosely, India. How do you start? Where do you start? Your costuming.
We started with the internet.
like you do. Like we do. It did require a lot of research, mostly because the one thing that we decided when we did this was that we wanted to do this right. If we were going to choose a specific place, we wanted to do it correctly and not insult anyone and really be true to the place and the time and
try to not go about it in an ignorant manner.
So we really set out to educate ourselves. And there is a very, and you have to, at least from what we've learned, is that there's a very specific language. Each piece of clothing has a name and an idea and a form behind it, and they're all very different.
And you're lucky if it has one name.
Yeah, you're lucky if it has one name. Sometimes they have several.
Because Hindi, not a unified language, very many dialects, so exactly as many dialects as you can find of Hindi. There are that many variations on what you can call a particular piece of clothing.
So we started online.
Yeah.
We found one very useful website which literally detailed the name of each piece and what it was supposed to look like. And then from there, we started going out to shops and we looked at shops online. But really, I think it wasn't until we actually went into a clothing store and looked at it in person did we really understand how these pieces were supposed to fit, how they looked, what the difference was between a more traditional look and a more Bollywood or just modern, because some, like, they take fabric that you'd see in any store, like covered in flowers or stripes or whatever, and like cut it into a tunic.
Yeah.
And put it over pants. And that's, you know, that is a modern Salwar Kameez. And that we had to learn what the differences were for what our purposes are going to be. And then we had to decide, given the colors that are typically out there, we had to make some choices about, okay, well, if we're going to do this and we want both, if you're not familiar with the show, there's kind of two main houses. There's Orsino, who is the Duke of Illyria, and there's Olivia, who is a high-born lady of the region. And we decided we wanted to distinguish the two houses by color. And we made these choices, and we found these really lucky setting us in India because we have these incredible color palettes.
Yeah, it's
beautiful, vibrant pinks and blues and yellows. And
you say you want to do, oh, we want to do the show in jewel tones. Oh, well,
oh,
you know.
Oh, done.
Yeah, done.
It's the easiest thing you could have done.
Unlike with the last show, we're like, well, we think we kind of want to avoid X so whatever color, and that would be literally the only thing
color
we could find. It's like, I don't want to wear yellow. Well, oh, too bad.
Oh.
I mean, that didn't really happen last show, but with another color. Anyway.
So yeah, so it literally, and actually it's really paid off that we did put the time and attention to detail into this, because when we have gone to probably every single Indian shop in the Atlanta area.
And most of them are in Decatur.
Most of them in Decatur.
As far as we can tell.
A large Indian population in Decatur. And I think we've started, you know, whenever you you find out about something new, then all of a sudden you start seeing it everywhere. Everywhere I go, I see Indian women in like their beautiful saris. And I'm like, oh, that's a Salwar Kameez. That's a sari. I feel very smart.
Yes,
yeah.
I was pulling into your apartment complex this morning, where did I see the sari?
There you go. They're everywhere.
They are everywhere, and especially now that we're looking for them,
yes,
subconsciously, I think.
So, but learning this language, when we've gone into the sari shops and we can tell them exactly what we want, it has helped us tremendously in getting what we need. And I think the people have respected us a lot more.
Yeah.
We've actually found a couple of sari shops that we've really
gotten
a lot of good business from.
Huge shout out to Kum Kum Sari Center on Church Street
in
Decatur. And also to Texas Sari
Sapne,
I believe. And that's on Woodcliff Road in Decatur, off of North Druid Hills.
They've been a huge, huge help. And they were very nice to us and dealt with our, it's Salwar Kameez? Yeah, is that right? You know, we think that's what we want.
Well, and the thing that I learned yesterday, which I guess I knew, but I hadn't really thought it all the way through, is that when you say you want a Salwar Kameez, at least with the person we were dealing with, she was like, oh, that means you want these pants, the traditional pants with the bulgy bit and the drawstring and the tight ankles, not the traditional pants that are sort of bootlegged and quite cool and groovy. So, you know, I don't know what you call it when it's not with the pants that are not traditional, but apparently Salwar was the magic word to getting what we wanted yesterday. And I was like, oh.
And the clothing for menfolk is called a what?
A kurta.
Kurta pajama.
We have two members of our cast that we will be talking more to in a bit. We have Sean and Dory, who have blessed our cast with their presence. Dory, her costume has been bought this weekend. She has not seen it yet. Thank goodness.
We'll let Nikki tell the story.
We'll let Nikki tell the story of why we had to buy it on a kind of an emergency local basis. But Sean, you've tried on your costume.
I have.
What do you think?
It was very comfortable.
You look hot.
Thank you. I put it on, and putting it on wasn't difficult. It was very easy to move around in. In fact, I'm thinking about purchasing it when the show is over and wearing it every day.
We're all making
it has
goals.
Secret pockets.
So it does. It has many secret pockets hidden within its folds. And also, it's very difficult to take off, which is fine by me because I don't plan on it.
It's good that you don't have any costume. Well, you have one costume change.
It's like Chinese handcuffs.
Yes, right, exactly. The harder you try to remove it, the harder it is to take off.
So anyway, so the reason why we had to go local to get Dory and Anna's costumes is we had ordered them from this online shop,
which had a great website, had U.S. side customer care, you know, seemed to be on the up and up. And
beautiful selection of stuff.
Emailed us, and you know, and they, and sort of what you run into. This is kind of the interesting thing is that I figured out that, as far as internet users go, India is number 3 with 50,800,000. That's what the number is, behind China and Japan. Anyway, so and then there's 1.7 million people in the United States that identify themselves as Indian Americans. So this would explain why 97% of the shops selling things on the internet that are Indian clothing are based in and delivered to India either exclusively or for free, and then There's a very small percentage of them that are either based in America and delivering, you know, or Canada or whatever, North America, and delivering to the U.S. for free or for not as much. And, you know, so this is what we're running into, is that the vast majority of the shops don't really service America because, frankly, most of the people they're interested in don't live here. So we had found this one place that we liked. We ordered a couple of tops. And then on Friday, I get a couple of tops, a couple of outfits. I get this email message on Friday. Due to political unrest in the area where the fabric is being procured, in parentheses, large capital letters, New Delhi, our vendor has been unable to obtain the fabric to make your outfits, and so we can't tell you when they'll be delivered. And I thought, well.
Oh my.
All right then. So I called Alyssa, and I'm all, well, you know, here's the story. So we emailed them, and I said, if I can't have them by October 9th, then if you can't guarantee me that they're going to be here by that date, then, you know, we can't do business, because that's, I kind of have to have them. And so we had to wait until Saturday morning, and Saturday morning they're like, well, we'll let them know that. And I said, well, that's not going to work. So
so we went out on a frantic search, and we're very lucky to find a couple of really beautiful pieces, and we're happy.
So it's like, you know, they say the internet, people that never would have met otherwise meet because of the internet, and political unrest that would otherwise never affect you because of the internet, it now affects you.
It's true.
The garment workers are rioting.
We are truly in a global society now.
This is remarkably similar, though, to how it went with Love's Labor, is that you started off on the internet and then also did a lot of brick and mortar shopping as well. But it ended up being kind of a balance. Would you say it's more internet this time, or it comes?
Well, internet has provided us with shoes, because finding shoes just became this huge insurmountable task. And the unfortunate thing is that, unlike with Western clothing, Indian men's pants and women's pants in the traditional style stay close to your ankles. Like, it sort of doesn't matter how long they are, because they're supposed to stack up around your ankles and be sort of fitting. And so you can see your feet. And so typically with men, you would just be like, wear your black shoes that you would wear to church or to, you know, a nice event. And that's what you do with guys on stage. And that's what happens. But in this situation, you'll be able to see their feet quite a bit better than you're used to being able to see their feet. And the shoes are very specific. So the shoes kind of became a thing. But I've decided I'm definitely on a terrorist watch list, because I'm getting a package of shoes, and they're coming from Karachi, Pakistan. So for anyone listening that might be tracking me for the government, it's just
run
shoes.
So I think actually in this case, the internet provided education primarily. And then overall, due to various circumstances, I think our grunt work has been done in person.
The last time we did a podcast, the three of us talked a great deal about balancing work and real life and doing the show. Seeing as we have two of our cast members, I would like to put that in front of them as well. I'll start off with Dory. How has it been balancing your full-time day job and sometimes overnight job, since you are the new girl where you were?
Right.
With coming up to Roswell and doing our show, how has that been?
It's surprisingly easier than I thought it was going to be. At first I thought, what have I gotten myself into? What was I thinking? I don't have time to learn lines and drive to Roswell every day. But you guys, the way you handled the practice schedule, you know, we've not gotten into the dress rehearsal part of the play, so obviously I might be saying something different in 2 weeks, but...
No, we're holding you to this now.
Oh, but no, I think you guys, the way you staggered rehearsal was great, especially for those of us who don't live in North Fulton County. Those of us who live down in the city, and it's a good 30 miles one way just to get up there. So, I hadn't done theater since high school when I started this, and I thought, oh, this will be fun, a little experiment to see if I still know what I'm doing. And I didn't at first, but I feel better about it now. And I have forgotten how hard it is to learn lines. And I do not have nearly as many lines as other people in the play, so I can't imagine what they've been going through.
What has been your secret to learning your lines?
Really, practice is what has helped. When I'm at practice, you know, I'm always getting people, hey, come over here, help me do this. Or I'm sure people are tired of that. But also recording my lines on tape and then playing them for myself has helped a lot.
Yeah, I've noticed that a great deal in this stretch of rehearsals, that people are just taking it on themselves, that if they're not doing a scene, they are off running lines with each other, which is just tremendously great. It does us a world of good. Sean? Same to you.
Well, I'm a full-time student, and I also, of course, have a part-time job, which and being a student is not actually hard when you're doing theater, because I specifically the auditions happened at a time when classes hadn't started yet, so I was able actually to pick classes that none of which ended after 4 p.m. And you know, a lot of times it's hard to convince people or make people understand, especially my manager at work, why I would do all of that for community theater. But really, it's because I have the bug. You know, I was kind of roped into performing in my very first production with North Fulton.
There was no roping.
There was some.
Okay, there was a tiny bit of lasso.
You were a male. Right. You were a male sitting out there waiting during our auditions, and we needed men.
And I'm glad you had a shortage.
We did.
Because once I got kind of shanghaied, and
or New Delhi.
You know, I was pressed into service in the King's Navy. But you know, after doing Love's Labors and then running off and deciding not even to take a break and doing that other play, you know, I just decided that it wasn't necessarily something that I would ever be able to explain to anybody, but that it was something that I just enjoyed doing. And coming to the auditions and doing the plays is something that I just really do enjoy. And so it hasn't been hard to balance. It's just been hard to let other people understand why I even try to balance it with everything else.
We get that too.
Yeah.
People sometimes look at us like we're insane. Like, you started what? You started a theater company? Okay.
And we have cast members in more than one play right now simultaneously. And that, to me, I mean, I know Brandy, she works full-time, and she's in two different plays, and I'm just, wow. I marvel.
Well, we have just a couple more weeks to go. We open on October 13th. Our play dates are the 13th, 14th, 20th, and 21st. Seating starts at 7 p.m. Show goes up at 8:30. Normally, we would say it's sundown, but it's the fall, and the sun goes down at, like, 3.
Up here, so we can't count on that anymore. Daylight so fast.
It's free admission, and we have a $5 suggested donation. What all do we have to do quickly?
I know that
set dressing.
I know that my area for this show, which has been really, really awesome, has been the physical aspect.
Yes,
I've been doing the fight choreography, and we've made some interesting choices for certain characters that require specific movement, incorporating some dance and various actions. So I know that once I get my girls with their scripts out of their hands, I can start really working on that. And
so
I'd
many
like
people
to.
Are almost off book.
And
anyway.
It's so great. So I know that that is specifically a couple people in particular. I really have to like buckle down and start working with them. So, but I'm really excited for that challenge, and it's been really fun for me to get to use some of my dance background to incorporate that. So it's been great.
And the stuff we ordered for the set should be showing up soon, so we can start doing our set experimentation.
Set experiments and getting sound taken care of. We have a possible lead from Friday that might turn out to be awesome if I get a good phone call tomorrow. And cross your fingers and toes. And come out and see it if you need more information. And of course you need more information because you're going to want to come and see this show. After all, it's free. www.northfultondramaclub.org.
And you can drink during it.
And you can bring your wine and bucket of chicken food, whatever you'd like to bring. I might recommend bringing a blanket because it's going to be October. It could be hot. It could be cold. This is Georgia.
We don't know.
But thank you very much for listening to our podcast. Say good night, everyone.
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 The music for NFDC Podcast number 5 is track number 1 off the remix album Mixture 1 by Lisa DeBenedictis, available only at magnatune.com. We should have podcast number 6 up and ready before the show opens on October 13th. In the meantime, thanks for listening and enjoy the music.
Your disinterest draws me in. I'll soldier on till you begin to want me back. I lay awake, eyes wide. Euphoria needles all inside. Down from the ceiling floating, I hate to be this girl. She is sleeping soundly far below, and I'm cold again. I'm a stranger in this room, with its heat that doesn't stay, and my snow tracks away from you. They get deeper every day, and I'm cold again when the morning comes. Little bird beneath your park bench, begging for the crumbs. And I'm driving home, soreness in my eyes. Sun is hanging cold in the January sky. Below, I'm high and low. Below, I'm high and low. Of coal, button mouth and frozen soul, unaffected, ever cold, no matter what I show. Below, I'm high and low.